My name is Sir Andrew Davis. I'm the music director of Lyric Opera of Chicago, and today I'm going to speak to you about Richard Wagner's last opera, Parsifal. Wagner was not a modest man. In the 1870s, having decided that there was no theatre in the world able to produce his operas as they should be produced, Wagner decided to build his own in the small Bavarian town of Bayreuth. A good portion of the money for the project came from his patron, King Ludwig II of Bavaria. That he and Ludwig were no longer getting along, and that the monarch was clinically insane, was of little interest to the composer so long as the check cleared. Parsifal ultimately premiered at the Bayreuth Festival Theatre, the Festspielhaus, in 1882, and that performance would give rise to an odd tradition. The audience applauded after Acts 1 and 2, only to be chided by the composer for not taking the work seriously. His fans then obediently remained mute at the end of the opera, further infuriating the cranky composer, who complained that now he could not tell if they liked his opera. Ultimately, this misunderstanding led to a Bayreuth tradition that audiences not clap after Act One. It's a tradition that has survived to the present day, even though this was not Wagner's intention. Many in the star-studded opening night audience, which included Claude Debussy, did admire the piece, but praise was not universal. Wagner's longtime champion, the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, was disgusted, writing that, quote, "Parsifal is a work of perfidy, of vindictiveness, of a secret attempt to poison the presuppositions of life, a bad work. The preaching of chastity remains an incitement to anti-nature. I despise everyone who does not experience Parsifal as an attempted assassination of basic ethics." End of quote. You would think that such a recommendation would have made audiences flock to the piece. Unfortunately, Nietzsche's basic complaint was correctly understood to be that the work was too religious, too much like a sacred rite, and too little like the meaty German dramas for which Wagner's fans worshipped him. Nietzsche's conclusion was consistent with Wagner's own overblown statements about the sacredness of the work. Combined with the ban on applause, which looked intentionally like church manners, where one also did not applaud, it gave rise to a long-standing feeling that Parsifal isn't any fun. That, and the fact that it's 5 hours long, although Valkyrie is 5 hours long and nobody complains about that. Wagner wrote operas, not liturgical works. His many attempts to differentiate Parsifal from the rest of his canon had, as we shall see, more than one motivation. But, as modern tastes have eroded the assumptions behind Wagner's arguments, the result has been unfortunate. People who love opera, even people who love Wagner, have feared Parsifal. Parsifal is different from his other operas, but not so much that opera lovers should worry that they will not enjoy one of the master's greatest works, filled with all the great music, drama, orchestral writing, and choruses for which we love Wagner. The excerpts you will hear are from an EMI Classics recording featuring Donald McIntyre as Gurnemanz, Waltraud Meyer as Kundry, Warren Ellsworth as Parsifal, Philip Yoll as Amfortas, David Gwynne as Titurel, and Nicholas Falwell as Klingsor. Reginald Goodall conducts the chorus and orchestra of the Welsh National Opera. Special thanks to EMI Classics for providing the recording, and to Nicholas Ivor Martin for his help in preparing this commentary.
Thank you.
When he was not composing, Wagner spent an enormous amount of time writing. In addition to the 10 to 12,000 letters of his we have, there are books, essays, musical analyses, articles, poems, and, of course, libretti. Unfortunately, the trees that were sacrificed for Wagner's prose sometimes obscure the forest, and the forest is Wagner's music. For all the time we spend analysing what Wagner said about his music, his time, his politics, and his religion, we remember him first and foremost for the music itself. And for that reason, it's worth looking into this simple opening musical phrase before we begin the march through the text of Parsifal's highly expository opening scene. Much about that opening phrase appears to support Wagner's claim that Parsifal was like nothing that had come before. For starters, where is the enormous Wagner orchestra? We hear a few strings backed by a single English horn, one clarinet and one bassoon, and they're playing in unison, which makes the ensemble sound even smaller. At most theatres, we can look down into the pit and realise that this is a charade. The actual orchestra really is Wagnerian, with triple and sometimes quadruple winds, four timpani, and on and on. But at Bayreuth, where Parsifal premiered, the pit is covered. Opening night audiences might well have believed they were hearing a completely new approach to orchestration. That is, until the other 90 players chime in at bar six. The musical content of the opening phrase can also be used both to make the argument that Parsifal is following an old formula and to argue that it is entirely new. What you just heard is a leitmotif, one of those short musical phrases that the composer had long been using to introduce people, ideas, and things. In this case, it's the love feast motif, a reference to a religious service having to do with Christian love. But that same phrase can be broken up into half a dozen smaller leitmotifs, including the motifs for the Knights of the Holy Grail, the character of Amfortas, the spear that is the cause of Amfortas' troubles, and the ideas of guilt, suffering, and communion. This is new for Wagner. The composer later wrote that what he wrote down in the prelude contains all he needs, and it all unfolds like a flower from its bud. And yes, Wagner is talking about himself in the third person. If the musical construction is both groundbreaking and familiar, a similar pattern can be found in the plot of the opening scene. Gurnemanz, a knight of the Holy Grail, wakes his fellow knights, who have been sleeping in the woods. It is time to pray. Gurnemanz is concerned about Amfortas, the leader of their holy order, whose wounds refuse to heal. The knights have tried everything, but the only thing that eases Amfortas' pain is his morning baths. The wild woman Kundry brings a new balm from Arabia, which Amfortas agrees to try, but both Gurnemanz and Amfortas know that something more is needed. Gurnemanz explains to the curious knights that Kundry, though unpredictable, is an ally. She is atoning for some unnamed sin by aiding the order. Amfortas, as it turns out, was wounded by the holy spear, the weapon that pierced Christ on the cross, and which was given into Amfortas' keeping. Seduced by a beautiful woman, Amfortas lost the spear to the evil Klingsor, who then used it to give Amfortas his wound. Prophecy says that the wound can only be healed by a pure fool, enlightened by compassion. Now that we have established much of the backstory, who should appear but a young man whose foolish exuberance causes him to shoot a swan with his bow? The knights are horrified. This forest is a sanctuary. Gurnemanz questions the young boy, who doesn't even know his own name, and the old knight invites him to observe the Grail ritual. They make their way to the Hall of the Grail, accompanied by the sound of tolling bells.
Thank you.
The bells are supposed to sound like church bells. After much experimentation for the performances in Bayreuth, Wagner invented his own instrument, called appropriately the Parsifal bell. You can also hear that the basic motif is echoed by other instruments. The bell's theme is its own motif, but it is encapsulated in other leitmotifs, including, not surprisingly, the devotion one. The Grail ritual requires Amfortas to display the Holy Grail to the assembled knights, but it causes him physical pain, and he does it only under duress. As the knights file out of the hall, Gurnemanz asks Parsifal if he has understood the ritual. Parsifal is unable to answer, and Gurnemanz disgustedly calls him a fool and sends him away. An otherworldly voice is heard, telling us that this young man is the pure fool, enlightened by compassion. The religious content of the opera may justify Wagner in calling it a Bühnenweihfestspiel, a festival play for the consecration of the stage, but there are also ways in which it is extremely familiar to Wagner fans. Spears, swords, objects with magical powers, it is all eerily like Wotan's spear, the Tarnhelm, Isolde's magic potion, and even Lohengrin's swan. And Parsifal and Siegfried have a lot in common. If Act I is steeped in Christian lore and ritual, Act II is openly erotic and sensual. We are at the magic castle of the sorcerer Klingsor, where we learn that Kundry has been bewitched by him. It was she who seduced Amfortas so many years ago. Wagner based his Parsifal on two medieval romances, Parzival with a Z by the German poet Wolfram von Eschenbach, and Perceval with a C by Chrétien de Troyes. This is definitely familiar territory for Wagnerites. The same Eschenbach Parzival is one of the sources for the composer's opera Lohengrin, and Eschenbach's contemporary, Gottfried von Strasburg, penned the Tristan story that forms the basis of that opera. Flying Dutchman, Tannhäuser, and The Ring derived from the same realm of epic and lied. And Meistersinger is about the poets who wrote such stories. But Kundry is expanded from the original sources, although in a way consistent with medieval conventions. Spelt with C instead of a K, she appears in the Chrétien de Troyes story as a grail messenger. Her transformation to beautiful woman in the opera by Klingsor is a reference to a different medieval tradition, that of the cursed, loathly lady, who is hideous because she is cursed. Like the frog prince, the loathly lady goes around trying to get heroes to kiss her so that she can be free of her curse. Except in Wagner's formulation, the story is reversed. Kundry is a beautiful temptress. Klingsor's men attack Parsifal, but the young hero defeats them and wanders into Klingsor's magic garden, where he encounters Kundry amidst a group of seductive flower maidens. Here is another musical indication that Wagner has evolved something new with Parsifal. Wagner was always willing to bend the rules of classical harmony. The chromaticism of the Tristan prelude is one of the things that first made him famous, but this is another thing entirely.
Thank you.
Kundry tells Parsifal all about his mother and his origin, including his own name. The S spelling of Parsifal is like the applause ban based on a mistake. The idea that Parsifal reversed, Fal Parsi, means pure fool in Arabic. It doesn't. Although the idea is reminiscent of Gottfried von Strasbourg's Tristan, in which the hero reverses his name, calling himself Tantris as a disguise. Kundry kisses Parsifal, but instead of transforming either of them, the kiss causes him physical pain. He now understands the source of Amfortas's wound, and he rejects Kundry's advances. She curses him and calls on Klingsor to attack Parsifal. The evil sorcerer throws his spear at him, but it stops in midair. Parsifal takes the spear and makes the sign of the cross, which causes the castle to crumble into dust. Act 3 occurs many years later. Labouring under Kundry's curse, Parsifal has wandered the world in search of redemption, only returning to the domain of the Grail today, on Good Friday. He is greeted by an aged Gournemanz, who recognises him as the pure fool, now enlightened by compassion. Gournemanz realises that the curse has been lifted. The scene includes the famous Good Friday music, commemorating that holy day. Parsifal was Wagner's last opera. It premiered in 1882, 14 years after Meistersinger. But as further evidence that Parsifal represented an evolution in Wagner's art, not a break with it, the composer had actually begun work on the piece 25 years before. He developed Parsifal alongside Tristan, Meistersinger, and The Ring. The work even borrowed from earlier pieces. Unlike most composers, Wagner never wrote church music, but he had started an opera on the subject of Jesus of Nazareth, and some of that work found its way into Act 3 of Parsifal. When the composer decreed that Parsifal was only to be performed at Bayreuth, he was, it's true, hoping to maintain the artistic purity of the work. He didn't, he said, want it to degenerate into mere amusement. That ban, incidentally, was observed until the Met broke it in 1903. But the composer's other reason for his ban was that he hoped the income from performances would support his widow. Audiences would flock to Parsifal, Wagner felt sure, and if they could only see it at Bayreuth, Cosima would get all the proceeds. The contemporary critic Eduard Hanslick wrote about Parsifal, "I must state here that the church scenes in Parsifal did not make the offensive impression on me that others and I had been led to believe from reading the libretto. They are religious situations, but for all their earnest dignity, they are not in the style of the church, but completely in the style of the opera. Parsifal is an opera. Call it a stage festival or consecrational stage festival, if you will." The opera ends with Parsifal healing Amfortas by touching him with a holy spear. Kundry, too, is released from her curse, and a white dove descends and hovers over Parsifal's head.